Good afternoon. From the KTOO Newsroom in Juneau, I'm Yvonne Crumry. Thank you for tuning in. Alaska's oldest ferry is too expensive to fix. That's according to officials with the Alaska Marine Highway System, who say it would take multi-millions to fix the 62-year-old Matanuska. Craig Tornga is the Marine Director. He says that seeking funding would compete with future projects.
Funding is tight, and will those dollars stay there in the rural ferry program, you know, with the new administration? We just don't want to be competing against our long-reach plan.
Tornga was speaking to the Alaska Marine Highway Operations Board during an April 25th meeting. The nine-member board makes recommendations to the state's Department of Transportation, which controls the ferry system. The board made a formal recommendation that the Matanuska be officially retired from the fleet. At the bare minimum, the ferry would require at least $45 million to return to service and around $130 million if it's certified for international travel. The ferry's problem surfaced during an overhaul 2 years ago and then multiplied. Surveys of the ship showed asbestos in the crew quarters and deteriorating steel throughout. The Matanuska is a large ferry, carrying up to 450 passengers and dozens of vehicles. It used to be one of Southeast Mainliners sailing the route from Lynn Canal north of Juneau all the way south to Prince Rupert, British Columbia. But for more than 2 years, the Matanuska has been used as a hotel ship for ferry workers in Ketchikan. Tornga says it's very useful right now, but it's still too expensive to operate long-term. Board member Captain Keith Hillard says the Matanuska is a prime example of what happens when you defer maintenance.
The report you just got here is a poster child of exactly where we do not want to be 10 years from now with the Taslina, the Hubbard, the Kennecott, the Columbia.
He says it's also a warning for the six new ferries the system plans to bring on in the next decade or so. He says it's like the old adage, paying a little now can save a lot later. Springtime is herring egg season in Southeast Alaska. Usually that means the region's largest tribal government will be setting up to deliver tens of thousands of pounds of the traditional food to tribal citizens across the region and beyond. But this year, those distributions won't be happening. The Central Council of the Tlingit and Haida Indian Tribes of Alaska announced this week that its annual traditional food distributions were canceled this year. In March, the federal government canceled a funding agreement with the tribe. For the last 3 years, the tribe distributed herring eggs, salmon, and black cod to tribal citizens in each of its recognized communities, from villages in Southeast to cities like Anchorage and Seattle. But the U.S. Department of Agriculture canceled the $500,000 in funding that provided the tribe's food assistance program. A USDA notice to Tlingit and Haida said the tribe's community food distribution, quote, no longer FUK's agency priorities and that termination of the award is appropriate, unquote. Aaron Angerman is Tlingit and Haida's food securities program manager. He said the community distribution program started in 2022 to promote self-sufficiency and to reduce reliance on food shipped from the lower 48.
Our answer to that, and then our heavy reliance on barge systems and things like that, was to turn back the clock a bit, promote food sovereignty, which is something that our people have relied on since time immemorial.
The money was part of a program called the Local Food Purchase Assistance Agreement, which was intended to encourage local governments to buy from farmers and food producers. And that aligned with the tribe's goal to keep more traditional foods that are harvested in Southeast Alaska in the fridges and freezers of tribal members.
For us to be able to take a food that was purchased from commercial vendors to contract those vendors who are tribal citizens to keep not only that funding within the tribe and the region, but also take a food source that was harvested in our area and typically sent overseas to bring that food back to our people and to be shared.
The herring egg distribution is special for this reason. Because of overfishing and exporting of herring and herring roe, the fish now only spawn in very limited areas. Angerman said his team is working to get more secure funding, but there's a lot of other work they're doing to further understanding and use of traditional foods in the meantime.
We need to work with elders and those with traditional ecological knowledge to see why and where and how we harvested previously. And to not only do that, but to teach people how to harvest themselves, how to process that food, how to put up or prepare that food.
Because, he said, if a salmon ends up on someone's doorstep and they don't know how to process it, that isn't food sovereignty. Angerman said Tlingit and Haida was able to purchase enough herring eggs to bring to some of their tribally run preschool classrooms this year, so the youngest tribal citizens can still learn about the importance of traditional food and land stewardship. And some distributions in Washington and Oregon will still happen, according to the tribe's release. The local tribal council in Seattle used different funding sources to set aside money for distributions to reach elders outside of Alaska. And a lawsuit over Juneau's Mendenhall River levy will now focus on how the cost of the flood protection project will be divided. This comes after the judge said the plaintiff's property will be included in levy construction. As KTOO's Alex Solomon reports, the lease now comes down to a question of whether or not the city must compensate homeowners for using their land.
Samuel Hatch lives next to the Mendenhall River on Meander Way. During the 2023 glacial outburst flood, he opened the door to his crawl space and saw water just beneath the floorboards.
My foundation is shaped like a Pringle. So it's like high in one spot, kind of in the middle, and then like down on all the corners.
Floodwater cracked his foundation.
So my house essentially folded around the corners where it settled.
That was before the levee plan. So he and his wife felt they had two options. Try to move their family of five with Juneau's tough housing market, or retrofit their home to defend against future floods. They chose to retrofit and paid thousands to lift their house up on steel pilings. Last week, Hatch joined a lawsuit with another homeowner who's suing the city for putting flood barriers on their land without compensating them. The lawsuit was originally aimed at stopping the construction of flood barriers along Mendenhall River, but has shifted its goals after a judge said homeowners could not opt out of having flood barriers on their land. The plaintiffs now say they want the city to pay homeowners for hosting the levee. Hundreds of households in Mendenhall Valley are expected to pay the same amount for the project that is intended to keep floodwater out of homes there. It's about $6,300, whether or not they're losing part of their property to the levee that will be there until the city comes up with a permanent flood protection solution. Hatch says that doesn't feel fair.
I get paying my share, but at the same time, I'm like, but the other people in the interior, they've lost nothing to this, and they're paying the same as me.
The judge ordered that the levee will go up because it's in the public interest, but the court has yet to decide how the cost will be divided. City officials say the order was a sigh of relief. Contractors building the levee initially skipped construction on one homeowner's land, but barriers have now gone up on his lawn. Scott Perkins is the attorney representing the homeowners. He says the case's core question is constitutional.
Did the city have the powers to put up the barriers and not pay for them? Or are they going to have to pay for them under the Fifth Amendment?
He's getting at whether the city is taking the land they're using for the barriers. Both the U.S. Constitution and the Alaska Constitution forbid the government from taking private land for public use without paying the owners. Perkins says he's confident the homeowners will prevail. If the court agrees, Emily Wright, the city's attorney, says the city's strongest argument is that taking the land is necessary to protect the public.
When there's an emergency, we have to act. Sometimes that means that the individual is put secondary to the greater good of the whole.
And there are special circumstances. An Alaska Supreme Court case ruled that the state is not required to pay if using the property is, quote, necessary to prevent an impending or imminent public disaster from fire, flood, disease, or riot, end quote. The court will have to decide whether a flood likely to happen in a few months is considered imminent enough. The other key question is whether the Juneau Assembly followed the right process when it passed an ordinance that created a local improvement district and approved the levee project. Landowners had the chance to vote it down, but only a quarter formally objected. Perkins says that the Assembly was wrong to count people who didn't vote as yes votes. But the judge wrote that the city's actions were lawful, so the levy's approval is expected to hold up in court. A trial has been scheduled for September 15 through 17. In Juneau, I'm Alex Solomon.
And a controversial mining exploration project near Haines has been in limbo since its biggest investor backed out late last year. Now the project's parent company wants to step back too. As Avery Elfelt reports for the Alaska Desk, there won't be a drilling program at the site this summer. The project's long-term future is less clear.
American Pacific Mining Corporation confirmed last week it plans to distance itself from the mineral exploration site known as the Palmer Project. The proposed mining site has fueled debate in Haines for years. The news came in a video posted to American Pacific Mining's YouTube channel. The company first bought the project in 2022, but in the video, American Pacific CEO Warwick Smith said the company aims to, quote, transact on it, which could entail selling to an Alaska-based company.
We're in the midst of having those conversations and looking to move that asset to a new home and take equity back from it, which would put us in an incredibly strong position, both cash-wise and equity-wise.
The plan comes about 5 months after Dowa Metals and Mining, a Japanese company, gave up its majority stake in the project. American Pacific took full ownership when that happened. At the time, Warwick said the deal provided a clear path forward for Palmer. But now, the company has decided to prioritize a different Montana-based exploration project over Palmer. Smith emphasized that the latter still has a lot of potential, but it will require a major investment in the interim.
It's going to take money to do that, and it's Alaska. It's outside of our wheelhouse, if we're completely honest. We think that there are, if we're being honest, we think that there are better groups that are more well-suited towards Alaska than we are.
For years, the project has fueled local debate over a mine's potential economic benefits and environmental repercussions. The exploration site is near the village of Klukwan and sits above a tributary that runs into the Chilkat watershed, which supports a run of all five species of Pacific salmon. During the video, one participant asked if Palmer will ever realistically be developed into a mine amid permitting challenges and local dynamics. Peter Mercer, the president of Constantine Mining LLC, which operates the project locally, responded that it's possible Palmer will become a mine. He nodded to other successful mines in Southeast Alaska and said the region boasts a, quote, tremendous amount of mineral potential. Mercer added that President Donald Trump's executive order that aims to unleash Alaska's extraordinary resource potential, including as it relates to minerals, also works in the project's favor.
Yes, this can be done here. You have to incorporate the discussions around salmon, the landscape, the environment, the culture. You'll have to incorporate all of that into your planning, but that's what you have to do for all these projects this day and age.
A Constantine spokesperson told KHNS the project is in a, quote, transitional period, and that there will not be a drilling program at the exploration site this summer. The spokesperson added that these types of deals are not uncommon in the mining exploration business. It remains unclear what a potential sale might mean for Constantine, the project, or the community in the long term. In Haines, I'm Avery Elfelt.
And as for the weather here in Juneau, it's currently cloudy and 50 degrees. It looks like we're expecting to get more rain tonight. There's a 100% chance. And tomorrow it looks like it could be rainy as well. You're listening to KTOO.